This is Audible.
Veritas Ferrum by David Annandale. Performed by Tim Treloar, Toby Longworth and Ramon Tickerham. The explosions rippled along both flanks of the Veritas Ferrum. The blasts were twin broadsides as the Iron Hand strike cruiser drove between its enemies. With Night Lords to port and the Alpha Legion to starboard, there was no question of evasion. There was only, for now, a choice of foe. As the Veritas was bracketed by the fire of the two smaller cruisers, her void shields flared with the brilliance of a new sun. The glare was so intense that for an instant, the Oculus showed nothing but white blindness. Standing at his command lectern, Captain Durren Atticus raised his bionic rasp of a voice over the din of alarms and the rumble of secondary blasts.
Damage report, Sergeant Galba.
Void shields collapse over port-sized stern, Captain. Fire in the landing bay and in the surf barracks.
Sealer Sector, divert its power to the shields.
Galba looked up from his post just beneath the lectern.
Captain, the survivors!
Atticus silenced the sergeant with a sharp gesture.
They're dead either way. Anyone in that sector is a casualty. Let's not add to their numbers. Do it, damn you!
Damn the arithmetic of war. Damn Horus. Damn the turncoat cowards who are filling the near orbit of Isfan V with the wreckage of ships, the flames of treachery, and the ruin of the Emperor's dream.
And damn me too.
Galba paused over his controls.
Captain?
Nothing.
But it wasn't nothing, was it? What was it he had said to his men, laughing with that bionic larynx of his? Laughing as the Veritas had begun its journey through the warp to the Istvan system? He had said that it was not true that the legions knew no fear, because he had a great one. And his fear was that they would arrive to find that their Primarch Ferus Manus had already crushed the War Master's rebellion without them. After Kalanides, after Fulgrim's craven ambush, and after the warp storms had calmed, Lord Manus had raced hard for Istvan, taking the fastest, least damaged ships and filling them with his most experienced veterans. Atticus had given over half his complement of warriors to the Primarch's folly, but now the Veritas Ferrum had finally dropped out of the warp at the system's Mandeville point and into a vision of hell. Atticus descended from the lectern and strode to the Oculus. Littering the far orbit of the Istvan Star was a graveyard of loyalist ships. Some had been caught as they attempted to escape, but many more were simply torn apart by enemy fire as soon as they emerged from the Immaterium. The Iron Hand's second wave had been virtually obliterated.
Hard to starboard.
Atticus swept his eyes over his crew.
Will none of you ask if I am relieved that my fear has not come to pass?
The battle was not over, but the terrible truth was that it seemed as though it soon would be. He jabbed a finger at the nearest enemy ship that hove into view as the Veritas began its turn.
I want everything hitting that Alpha Legion bastard.
If he had still had lips, they would have parted in a murderous smile.
So, the individual is unimportant, is he, Alpharius? Then what we're about to do won't hurt you at all.
With the slow majesty of a glacier, the Veritas rounded on its prey. The Alpha Legion ship, the Theta, tried to evade by rising above the ecliptic, but it was too slow and too late. Concentrated lance and torpedo fire from the Veritas overwhelmed its void shields. They went down in a flickering cascade, and the Theta's running lights died just before the Iron Hand's main barrage struck it amidships. The blow was devastating. The Theta broke in half. Galba called out from his station.
The Night Lord's vessel is firing again.
Noted, Sergeant. Countermeasures.
Atticus looked at the bisected cruiser before them.
Helmsman, take us through.
prow of the Veritas Ferrum drove into the dissipating fireball where the core hull of the Theta had been. The two sections of the Alpha Legion vessel seemed to fold in upon the Veritas in an embrace of the void. There was a glancing impact that brought down the starboard prow shields, but then the Veritas was clear. Behind them, the Night Lord vessel's flank was exposed to the wreckage. The ship was maneuvering into an evasive turn, but there was no time. The shattered rearward bulk of the Theta slammed into it, lighting up the void as the reactor went critical. The sound that came from Atticus's voice box was a growl of satisfaction.
Sergeant Galba.
Shields holding. Just.
Ahead, there was a clear path. Atticus turned to the Vox operator.
Any word from the drop site?
Nothing I can confirm, Captain.
They had received only fragmentary Vox chatter since their arrival. Broken distress calls from voices that claimed to be Iron Hands, lamenting the death of their Primarch, but never any direct responses to hails from the Veritas. Atticus returned to the command lectern.
More lies, then.
He would not believe Ferrus Manus had been killed. Not unless he saw the Primarch's body before him. Perhaps not even then. He would not believe it. Yet deep down he knew there was nothing left to salvage from the drop site, and he felt his soul filling with a hatred he would carry to his grave. Galba's Auspex blared a proximity alarm.
Capital ships! Dead ahead!
Atticus could not sigh anymore. So much of the weak flesh was gone, replaced by the strength of metal, that he had given up many basic human mannerisms. So, he did not sigh. He tightened his fists instead, bending the rails around the lectern.
We must retreat. If we do not, if nothing of the Loyalist forces survive the slaughter on the surface, what then? What then for our Legion?
The Vox operator whirled to face the lectern.
Signal, Thunderhawks, two, outbound from the debris field, requesting aid.
The war arithmetic loomed before Atticus once more.
Put it on main speaker.
This is Sergeant Keedem, Salamander's 139th Company. Our carrier vessel was destroyed. We need recovery.
Atticus looked at the tactical hololiths before him. So few allied ships left. The Veritas was the only one close enough, and with even the illusion of freedom to act. But the arithmetic was unforgiving.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. We cannot help you. This is the 10th Legion strike cruiser Veritas.
We have a number of your brothers, and those of the Raven Guard aboard. We lost many to save them. Is that worth nothing?
Do you have our Primarch?
No.
Then I regret...
Three legions have fought for the Emperor, and now face annihilation. Are they to be abandoned? Their sacrifice forgotten? Will you grant the traitors an absolute victory? Will there be no witnesses to what was done this day on Istvan V?
Atticus cursed. He cursed Keedem. He cursed the entire galaxy.
Helmsman, set course to intercept. Recover those ships.
He hated the piece of his soul that rejoiced at the decision. He wished he had replaced it with Bionics II. The Veritas Ferrum closed with the Thunderhawks. On both its flanks, the great warships of the Sons of Horus and the Emperor's Children were approaching. A noose was closing around the Iron Hands. The Veritas slowed to take on the two gunships, even as the traitors opened fire. The starboard landing bays were closing when the torpedoes struck the port side, and the already terrible damage became catastrophic. The explosions were thunder that built upon thunder. Atticus felt his ship's wound through the command interface, like a blade scraping the length of his ribs. The bridge klaxons, with the Veritas screaming in pain. But the Iron Hands still had the vector of escape. Atticus pounded the railing of the command lectern.
Go!
The Veritas ran. The tear in its flank was huge. It bled air and flame and tiny armored figures into the void. the ship was rocked by yet another torpedo hit. Galba was hunched over his post as though the screens themselves were his enemies.
Fire spreading, Captain. Over 100 legionaries lost to the void.
Many times more than the Thunderhawks were transporting. I'm sure our guests are worth it.
He felt it then. The final excision of mercy from his being. The last weakness killed one battle too late. And now, with only one desperate path remaining, a calmness as cold as the grave descended upon him.
Make the jump.
Galba was staring at him.
Captain, the hull is compromised.
Make the jump. Now.
Veritas Ferrum's warp engines flared. The bleeding ship plunged into reality's scream. And Atticus gazed into the maw of a future as pitiless and uncertain as he.
War Master by John French. Performed by Ramon Tickerham, Tim Treloar, and Toby Longworth.
War Master.
The word hung in the silence as it left Horus's lips. Beyond the high, crystal-flex windows, the light of distant stars hung in sickly folds of gas and dust. Armored and enthroned, the Primarch of the 16th Legion gazed into the shadows as though waiting for an answer.
The title is heavy around my neck. Horus. Lupercal. Father, son, friend, enemy. All are lost beneath the weight of that one word.
He turned his head, looking to the black iron arms of the throne. His eyes moved over the bronze of a mace as tall as a mortal man. It was called Worldbreaker, and he had accepted it from his father's hand along with the title of War Master and Command of the Great Crusade. His gaze came to rest upon the eagle head pommel. A ghost of a smile touched his lips.
Our father never spoke of what it meant, only the limits of its authority. A dangerous word to leave unqualified. Perhaps he intended me to discover its meaning. Perhaps he did not care what it meant, as long as it freed him from us, his sons. Perhaps he did not know what it would mean for his Imperium.
Horus raised his hand, and a column of hololithic light filled the air before the throne. The shapes of men and women formed in the grainy projection, twisting, shouting, dying, their pleas and screams looping over and over as the thunder of bolter fire rolled through the silence.
He knows now.
He nodded to himself, the reflected light of the hololith flickering across the liquid black of his eyes.
The fire is lit, and all that was is cast to the wind. We are committed, he and I, my brothers and our legions. All humanity's futures bound together in this circle of blood. We are all the storm now. The Imperium will fall and rise by my hand, or fall and fall and fall.
Slowly he stood, his armor whispering and clicking. He gestured again, and more cones of cold light surrounded him, turning with images of blind faces. Some screamed, with words, blood, and smoke spewing forth from their mouths, while others droned on in their dead, monotonous voices.
We have no other recourse. Obliteration is the only option.
Hydra has failed. Chorus inclined his head, listening.
All is blood, and the screams of change. Anarchy is this age's king. We fall apart and this war slips from our fingers to spin into oblivion.
In spite of everything, he lives!
Horus turned, watching the holographic recordings bloom around him, and the throne room danced with a ghost light of a thousand messages.
500 ships lost to the void of the storm spike? And the enemy was waiting for us?
Istvan was supposed to burn in silence so that our war could be won before it ever truly began. The angel's wings were to be broken at my feet. And still, failures come tumbling one over the other. And on, and on.
Illiman gathers all his strength to Ultramar.
He paused, his eyes fixed upon the image of a shrunken astropath.
Half burned, yet our brother lives. Rabute, wise Rabute. Rabute, with his scratching quills and his plans and his hope. Too understanding. Too strong. Too damned perfect. I wish he was with us.
With a flick of his bladed fingers, the throng of images vanished and silence flowed back with the returning shadows. Horus shook his head, his eyes still fixed upon the throne.
You would say that I listened too much to Alpharius and Lorgar, that a war fought with deceit is doomed to fail. Perhaps you would be right. The Hydra does not see all, and now his blindness places a knife at his own back. Korax would not have made such an error. Strange, is it not, that so many I wish beside me stand against me, while at my back are only the flawed and damaged? I am a master of broken monsters.
Slowly, he began to circle the edge of the great hololithic table, the sound of his footsteps lost in the echoing silence.
I cannot control them or their sons. And they know it. Mortarion and Perturabo and the rest, they can all feel it. They all know that this war is no longer something that can be guided, only ridden out. But they never understood me. Not truly. And they understand less with each passing second. They doubt. They think that I have lost my way. I can see it in their hearts. The pettiness, the pride, the seeds of ruin driving them on, feeding the tempest. With such creatures must I remake the future.
He stopped again at the foot of the throne and reached out. His hand closed over Worldbreaker's haft. With casual ease, he raised it up so that the chamber's thin light caught every dent and scar on the polished metal.
1,000 battles. 10,000. 10 times 10 times 10,000. To bring about the new age. All of the certainties of the past torn down. All the beliefs that made them turned to ashes. War on every front stretched across time until none can know when the final blow will come. There is no disaster, for all disasters serve me alone. The storm rises only so that the thunderbolt may fall.
He looked down at the throne again, shaking his head sadly. His arm relaxed and Worldbreaker resting at his side. His gaze shifted as though he were looking at something beyond what lay in front of him.
No other would have dared this. Not even you. Perhaps that is why our father chose me. Perhaps that was his only moment of honesty.
Then his gaze focused and hardened. Black eyes like reflective pools in the face of an unforgiving king. Upon the arm of the throne, the skull of Ferus Manus stared back at Horus with empty sockets that had once been eyes. A thin, fracture web of cracks rang across the perfect dome of the slain Primarch's crown, spiraling back to a splintered pit in its temple. Even reduced to polished bone, the skull still seemed to radiate strength and defiance.
It does not matter how the galaxy burns, only that it does. War Master. That is what it means, my brother. the strength to do what must be done.
Strike and Fade, by Guy Haley. Performed by Tim Treloar, Ramon Tikaram, and Toby Longworth. Where there had once been many sons of Nocturne, now there were only four. Brother Jafor, Grim Hyfast, the young neophyte Gasol, and the ever-silent Donak. They crouched among the rocks above the trail. None knew the others well, and that they had come together at all amidst the turmoil of the massacre was as great a miracle as any. They spoke in whispers. They had not dared use the wider voxnet for days. Their voices barely carried above the wind, and Donak's repetitive sharpening of his combat blade. Gasol flexed his shoulders, stretching his numbed limbs.
When will they come?
Jafor quietened him with a raised hand.
Patience, Neophyte.
And stay still. Your motion will betray us to the enemy.
Gasol's face reddened at Hyfast's words.
I am sorry, Masters.
Do not be sorry. This is not how your training should be. But you will be stronger for it.
The scout nodded. Hyfast grunted bitterly.
If we live.
The old warrior had no patience with the youth. Whether that was his nature or merely anger at the recent atrocities they had witnessed, Jafor could not yet tell.
Brother, mind the spirit of the neophyte.
And what of our spirits? My dreams are tapestries of gross betrayal. Our brothers slaughtered by those they once called friend.
Just have a care for the lad.
Jafor sighted down his weapon to where their improvised explosives had been planted.
I worry more for Donak. He has not spoken at all since we found him. The flames of his eyes are low. The forges of his hearts have been quenched.
You see, there are things too great for even a space marine to bear. Tell me you are untouched by it.
Jafor spoke so quietly, his voice was barely audible.
I am not untouched, brother. My hearts ache. My mind cannot contain the enormity of the slaughter. My eyes are sore with sorrow.
He turned to Hyfast.
But my rage outmatches it all. We four are of different companies within the Legion, granted. But all of us were born of the fire and fury. Our brotherhood is unshakable. There is succor for me in that and power. Let all the other Legions turn upon the sons of Nocturne, for nothing can break the bonds between us. There will come a reckoning. That is what I say to any who doubt us.
Hyfast nodded solemnly. When he spoke, he was calmer.
And that is why we follow you, brother.
All is not lost. That the traitors spend so much time scouring this particular area gives me hope. I do not believe that we are the last servants of the Emperor on Istvan V.
And if we are?
Jafor shifted.
Then we will fight to the very end. Silence now. The Night Lords are coming.
They all held themselves as still as the rocks around them. They waited until the faint sound of engines reached their enhanced ears. Gasol looked up.
Do you hear that?
Vikas, do we withdraw?
Jafor shook his head.
Too late. Look.
A figure came around the curve in the track. He was clearly a legionary, but unarmored and with welts crisscrossing his pale flesh. He staggered towards the defile where the salamander's booby traps waited.
Now?
Gasol produced the detonator switch, but Jafor held up his hand urgently.
Wait! That is no traitor who runs before them.
The sound of bikes built to a roar as a figure in night blue armor veered around the mountainside. He rode the narrow, uneven path with breathtaking skill. chased the stumbling figure, lashing him with a cruel whip, harsh laughter grating from his stylized helmet orbiters. Four other bikers followed, the lightning marks on their battle plates sullied with dry blood. Hatred boiled up in Jafar's heart. He looked at Gasol. The scout's face was flushed with excitement.
Wait for their captive to get clear.
The lone legionary was still within the blast zone. But the bikers were gaining on him. Any longer, and they too might escape the worst of it. Jafar felt his guts twist.
Now, Gasol, now!
There was a terrific explosion. The blast of multiple charges erupting out of the lengthening shadows. The leading Night Lord was hurled from the track like a rag doll, his bike plunging end over end down the steep mountainside. His followers skidded to a halt, frantically scanning through the clouds of obscuring dust to see who had attacked them. Jafar surged forwards, aiming for one traitor who had removed his helmet. He would pay dearly. A boiling jet of promethium from Jafar's flamer engulfed the warrior. He fell screaming from his mount, his burning flesh sloughing from his bones. The others spun their bikes and opened fire. Treachery had left their skills undimmed, and bolter shells tore up the rocky terrain. But Hyphast and Donak fired with impunity from cover. One Night Lord raised a plasma pistol before a bolter shot took him in the chest, and he slumped over the handlebars. There were two of the traitors left. One gunned his engine as his comrade intensified his fire, rearing up onto the hillside. Fishtailing madly, he rode his bike up the incline towards Jafar. He brought a chainsaw down at the salamander's head, but his bike slipped sideways on the scree-covered slope, and he reached out to stay his fall. His hand never touched the ground. A bolt exploded within the traitor's gauntlet, spraying ruined flesh and metal. As the warrior fell, Jafar looked to his left. Brother Donak strode forwards, his weapon held level in both hands. He advanced calmly on the fallen Night Lord, putting a single shot through his eye lens. The last traitor swung his bike around again to bring its twin bolters to bear, but Hyphast brought him down, blowing out his chest plate along with the ribcage it shielded. The silence was sudden and horrifying. The air stank of propellant and murder. Jafar wrinkled his nose.
Well fought, brothers. By 1,000 pinpricks must we bleed them.
They died more easily than they deserved. Quickly now, young scout. Strike and fade. Let's strip the bodies.
Hyphast went down to the dead, and Donak and Gasol followed him.
What have we told you, lad? Leave the gun! Take nutrient packs, ammunition!
Hyphast stopped to put a bolt in the head of a traitor who stirred.
Night Lord's bolts fit a salamander's gun. A Night Lord's water bottle will quench a salamander's thirst.
It feels wrong.
These warriors were our cousins. They were raised up by the Emperor alongside us. Their cause has been our cause. Their lord, brother to our lord. But now we are opposed. They are the enemy. And we are the righteous.
Jafar did not hear his brother's words. He knelt beside the Night Lord's fallen captive, and his heart sank when he saw a fist-sized hole in the legionary's back. He rolled him over, seeing the emblem of the Raven Guard tattooed on his shoulder. The legionary's eyes fluttered. Jafar took him in his arms.
I have killed you, kinsman.
The Raven Guard's eyes focused.
No, brother. You have saved me. Do not weep.
I would weep for us all, my friend. Loyalist and traitor alike. To slay our own kind is no small thing, no matter the enormity of their crimes.
They are our own no longer. Darkness has overtaken them. Listen to me. You must fight on. Fight and survive.
And you survive with us.
The Raven Guard smiled and weakly shook his head. His eyes closed. Jafar stayed with him until the weak beating of his hearts had ceased. When his brothers approached, Jafar pointed to the mountain peaks high above the trail. He did not speak, for in that moment he did not trust the authority of his voice. As they made their way from the ambush, he went to one of the Night Lord's corpses. With his knife, he scratched the mark of his legion into the warrior's greave. The work was rapid, but fine. A dragon's head of pure silver scores, roaring outrage against betrayal.
Let them see. Let them see that the shadows of Istvan harbor the flames of vengeance, and that those flames will burn them all.
Then he departed, following his brothers away from the traitor's inevitable pursuit.
The Horus Heresy, The Eightfold Path, by Anthony Reynolds. Performed by Chris Fairbank, Jamie Parker, and David Timpson. Directed by Samuel Gunn. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library.
I stand waiting, a dueling axe held loosely in my hand. It is not Gorechild. That roaring monster is purely for killing. The bout is not sanguis extremis. The weapon is bound to my wrist with chain in honor of the Dashean gladiators. I have seen their bones. I have walked the sight of their death. I helped enact Angron's vengeance upon their killers. I have never met them, yet their deaths have informed what we are becoming. We are slaves to their memory.
Third blood, Khan.
Borok is stripped to the waist, as am I. His slab-muscled torso is crisscrossed with old wounds, scars upon scars. All of them are on his front. He has never shown an enemy his back. He is no coward.
First blood.
He is disappointed. I can see it in his eyes. But he nods in agreement. The Legion has bled enough. There have been too many deaths in the pits since Angron's change. His ascension. That was the word that his brother Logar used to describe it, at least. And as ever, as Angron has changed, so too have his sons. The circling spectators are noisy. They bray like animals. They hunger for the sight of blood. The butcher's nails demand it of us all. They press into the soft flesh of my mind, grinding and wrenching at my pain receptors. They are getting worse. Even at their most dormant, they make themselves known. Corkscrewing into my brain, the screws turn and the nails hammer. The camaraderie of my fellow world eaters cannot raise a smile from me. Food tastes like ashes. There is no joy to be had but that found in killing. Opening arteries, cleaving flesh, taking skulls. This is what the nails want from me. I have shunned my brothers these last weeks. Dark thoughts haunt me. I have taken to walking the decks of the Conqueror alone, stalking her corridors compulsively, as though the mere act of walking kilometers upon kilometers will give me some sudden insight, some direction, some hope. I had not intended to come here tonight. Perhaps the nails brought me to the pits, but once I heard the siren's call of clashing blades and weapons hacking into flesh, I was unable to turn away. the promise of even a moment's relief from the incessant grind on my cortex was an offer that was, tonight, irresistible. The nails want me to fight again. I have not been here since I humbled Erebus. The wretch's cowardice denied me the kill, and the nails punished me for it. But I am here now, and already the pressure has eased. Borok takes his place opposite me in the circle. He will fight with his usual armament, a pair of long curved blades, swords against axe. Such a fight never lasts long. I attack. It is the only way I know. My speed takes him by surprise, almost ending the fight in the first breath. He recovers well, though. We are both dancing to the tune of the nails, and it is an ugly turn. Few within the Legion fight with grace anymore. I block a blade that flashes for my throat, forcing me to sway aside from its twin coming in low for a disemboweling strike. I kick Borok away, slamming my foot squarely into his solar plexus. He staggers back. I wait for him, rolling my wrist, spinning the dueling axe as I adjust my grip. He snarls as he throws himself at me. I meet him head on. Borok is one of the Devourers, one of Angron's bodyguards. The Primarch never needed a bodyguard, of course, not before. And now, chained and bound below deck, the notion that he needs protecting is laughable. The Devourers are little more than his jailers. An ignoble task for what should have been the Legion's elite. Block, sweep, sidestep, strike. This is not real. These fights are nothing but distractions to ease the pain until the real battle is joined once again and the Legion can be unleashed. The thought of releasing Angron from his prison is not a comforting one. And what of us, his sons? Are we doomed to a similar fate? Will the last of our humanity be bled out as well, leaving us as nothing more than chained lunatics? The nails punish me as they feel my aggression falter. They stab into my brain, blinding me with a white burst of agony. Borok almost takes me then. In my distraction, I only avoid his slashing blades by a hair's breadth. I can see the frustration in him. He wanted to test himself against the warrior that had bested the Dark Apostle. But that was different. That was true. This is merely a charade. One of his blades scrapes through the haft of my axe, almost grazing my knuckles. That would have been first blood, though a result like that would have made Argeltal laugh. Perhaps it is the memory of my old friend that adds some fuel to what comes next. A backhand blow sends me stumbling to the deck. Something drips onto the back of my hand. Blood. Did he graze me without me feeling it? No. We both glance up, the fight forgotten. The ceiling is bleeding. Another drop hits me, then another. It is trickling down the walls. Then I hear Angron's roar. He has been raging for weeks, but this is different. It silences the crowd. The sound wells up through the grilled deck, vibrating through the steel. It makes the walls shudder and groan. It crackles out through the unpowered vox horns. It is enough to warp reality itself. My heart begins to thunder in time with the pounding in my head. It blurs with Angron's din, rising in intensity, a building crescendo. My fingers tighten around the haft of my axe. A growl escapes my lips. The pounding obliterates everything. I know what is coming, but I am powerless to prevent it. It comes on faster than it ever has before. I barely have time to take a breath. It hits me like a tidal wave, and in an instant I'm drowning. Taking the axe in both hands, I surge to my feet. Everything goes red! The stink of blood and raw flesh is the first thing I notice. The second is the roar. Not Angron. The demon Primarch has fallen silent, but the roar of the crowd is just as deafening. My vision returns slowly, the red haze lifting to reveal the aftermath of butchery. Blood coats my hands and arms to the elbow. It drips off my axe. There's blood in my mouth, too, caking my lips and chin. It is not my own. I look at the carnage I have wrought. Burok is no more. What is left is a ruin, the work of a psychopath. The crowd roars its approval. It is sickening. I want to be away from here, away from the screams and the charnel stink. A figure steps forward. My eyes are unfocused, yet the urge to bury my axe in his blurry face makes my fingers twitch.
Orok was of the Devourer's Khan. By rights, his place is now yours.
That actually makes me laugh. It comes out as a bloody cough, spraying spittle and gobbets of congealed gore. I drop my axe, and it falls with a dull clang. I wipe my hands down my arms. Blood sloughs away, dripping from my fingertips. I look around like a dreamer waking from a deep slumber. The fury of the crowd, their anger and bloodlust, batters against me. These are my sworn battle brothers. This is my legion. We will no longer walk the crimson path. I see that clearly now. We are walking another path entirely. A road far more damning. I had thought it superstitious nonsense, nothing more than the religious ranting of the 17th Legion. It is not. Sadly, it is not. We are walking the Eightfold Path, and there can be no turning back.
Horus Heresy, Lucius, The Eternal Blade, by Graham McNeil. Directed by Christian Dunn. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, Martin Ellis, Jonathan Keeble and Toby Longworth. Lucius walked beneath a sky torn and shredded by storms. He had died beneath a sky like this, in a shattered temple far from what the 15th Legion called, with stultifying literalness, the planet of the sorcerers. The Emperor's children had splintered in the wake of Fulgrim's apotheosis on Idris. Some had followed the Primarch to answer a summons from the Warmaster, while others seized Legion ships to strike out on their own. But a black mood had all but consumed Lucius since Idris. He had died, but that wasn't why he brooded. He had been beaten. A raven named Nikona Sharakin had actually killed him, and had taken no satisfaction from that supremely unlikely feat. That rankled. That hurt. Lucius did not know what intervention had brought him back, whether it had been some higher power or the lunatic science of Fabius, and didn't much care. Now he had something to prove, to himself more than anyone else. He was Lucius the swordsman. No one was more skilled with a blade. Lucius first heard of Sanact from a preening pretty boy named Hathor Mart, a legionary who reminded Lucius so much of his younger self that he'd wanted to kill him there and then. Mart told Lucius that Sanact was a student of the ancient schools of swordsmanship, a warrior of unsurpassed skill, whose defeat remained unseen by the Corviday's most gifted scryers. Lucius didn't know who the Corviday were, but was willing to bet that they had not factored him into their visions. And so he had abandoned the rest of his legion, as much as the rabble Fulgrim left behind could still be called that, and set off to find this Sanact. The one constant that Lucius came to appreciate of the Crimson King's adopted homeworld was that nothing was constant. He had been walking for what felt like forever, but his destination came no closer. Sometimes Sanact's tower appeared to be no larger than a gunship, hovering over glassy plains that reflected a sky that did not match the one above. Other times, it rose from distant mountains, a stalagmite of such colossal proportions that it was a mountain itself. Always, it was just ahead of him, taunting him, drawing him on. Right now, it appeared as a slender minaret of fluted ivory and mother-of-pearl with a cupola that burned in silver fire. It stood amidst the thick forest of trees that writhed with their own sick radiance. Living flames leapt from branch to branch, giggling with childish amusement as the forest grew and fell back, denying him a way through.
"Scared of me, are you?"
The blue flame at the top of the tower flared brighter in response. Lucius drew his sword, its blade radiant silver. It had been a gift from his Primarch, too noble a weapon for hewing, but needs must. Lucius hacked at the glass trees, shattering glowing limbs to fragments with every swing. He pushed deeper into the glittering forest, shorn branches reforming behind him with the sound of windows breaking in reverse. Capering flames screeched in annoyance, but Lucius ignored them. They darted in and sought to burn him, but he unhooked the barbed whip that he had lifted from Kalimos and lashed them back. They squealed and fled its agonizing touch. Then the forest parted, and Sanact Tower was before him. Closer now, he saw the mercury-bright flame veining its structure like a living thing. A warrior in crimson armor stood in a dueling circle of flattened sand before the tower. Twin swords hung at his waist, one pommel capped with a dark jackal's head, the other a white hawk. Both were hooked coppish blades with strange shimmering curves, which gave Lucius a thrill of anticipation. To face a new blade was always interesting.
"I hear you have been looking to fight me, Lucius."
The warrior's face was obscured behind a helm with a silver crest and faceplate.
"Are you Sanact?"
I am Sanact of the Athenaeans, yes.
Then I've come to fight.
Is it your wish to die?
I think I did that once already, so I'm not about to try it again.
Sanact removed his helm, revealing a youthful face and close-cropped ash-blonde hair, innocently handsome in a way that Lucius couldn't wait to destroy.
Your feelings say different. You want to know why you came back. That is why you sought me out, to find a swordsman as skilled as the Raven. One who revels in the kill.
They tell me you're good.
I am the best of my legion.
That's not saying much.
Lucius hooked the whip to his belt and entered the dueling circle. Sanact drew his swords, one crystalline edged and glittering with witchfire, the other a simple energy blade. Lucius rolled his shoulders and swung his blade to loosen his wrist. He had sparred with his own legion, but had stopped short of killing anyone since Idris. No such restraint was needed here. He circled Sanact, studying his movements, assaying his reach and footwork. He saw strength and speed, confidence that crossed into arrogance. So like himself, it was almost funny.
I assure you that I will defeat...
Lucius attacked before the Thousand Suns warrior finished speaking. All of his strikes were repulsed with casual ease. They broke apart and circled again, studying one another and using obvious cuts and feints to test the other's mettle.
You have natural ability, but I have studied every school of the blade since the first swords were hacked from the Debruja flint beds of old Earth.
They came together again in a clash of blades. Sanact was blindingly fast, his two weapons moving in perfect concert. Lucius could fight with two swords, but preferred the focus of a single blade. Sanak's blades cut high and low, forcing him to work twice as hard to keep them at bay.
Your thoughts betray you.
Lucius heard the first trace of amusement in Sanak's voice.
You fight with passion, but I can feel every attack before you make it.
Are you actually giving me tips on technique?
Sanact swayed aside from a throat-opening thrust.
I am a scholar of martial knowledge. It is my duty to pass on what I have learned to others, by example.
Thanks, but I don't need your help.
You are manifestly incorrect.
Anger touched Lucius, but instead of controlling it, he let it consume him. An angry swordsman made mistakes, but now he needed that anger. He threw himself at his opponent, discarding any notion of testing his defenses, just going for the kill. He wanted to take this arrogant cur apart, to gut him without mercy and without finesse, to give him an ugly death. Sanact turned aside the attacks with lightning-fast parries and riposte, but Lucius kept up an unrelenting pressure. He forced him back to the edge of the circle, relishing the confusion he saw in Sanak's eyes. No longer able to pick out Lucius's emotions from the morass of anger, Sanact was falling back on techniques learned by rote and from ancient teachers. And that just wasn't good enough. Lucius hooked his sword under the energy-wreathed blade and spun it from Sanak's grip. As the warrior's arm went wide, Lucius kicked him in the groin and slammed the hilt of his sword into his blandly handsome face. Sanact fell back, rolling and bringing his second sword to bear. Lucius smashed it aside. His return stroke swept down to open Sanak's throat, but the silver blade stopped a hair's breadth from Sanak's neck as though striking stone. Resistance vibrated up Lucius's arm, and he crashed his other fist into Sanak's jaw instead.
Sorcery? You'd save your miserable skin with sorcery?
Heal.
Lucius spun around, his sword coming away from Sanak's neck.
But I would.
Another red-armored warrior stood at the edge of the dueling circle, a cloak of blackly iridescent feathers billowing at his shoulders.
And who are you to spare his life?
I am Arzek Araman, and I will soon have need of Sanak.
Thank you.
Horus Heresy, Guardian of Order by Gav Thorpe, directed by Christian Dunn, performed by Gareth Armstrong,